LV, N2BYS. No traffic, N2BYS.
Okay, we got you before, Ed. Sorry about the mix-up on the call, N2BYN. KC2FGU, Mark. All right, we'll go with the list as we have it. Looks like everybody's kicking back and waiting for the holidays to roll past after it does damage to our wallet. So, let's see. Bob, you were checking the email. What do we have this week? W2FQQ, that's what it'll be.
Thanks, everybody. Good morning, I'm all right. Good evening to everyone. A few interesting things in here. Justin sent a story along as far as whatever happened to Channel 1 on the TV. I'm just reading it here. It's kind of interesting. There was a few things in here. The one that kind of caught my eye, and I'm not so sure that this is actually factor or perhaps an overzealous journalist, but I'll read it. It's a short story that supposedly was in the New York Post on December the 5th. Basically says, garage door remote control devices were recently knocked out of commission for miles around when the Air Force facility in Colorado Springs tested a radio frequency that it plans to use in the event of a homeland security threat. It seems the Air Force uses the same frequency that controls an estimated 50 million garage door openers around the country. And unless slight adjustments can be made in the frequency, affected homeowners will have to shell out $250 to have new units installed, according to an official site with the overhead door company, which I find to be totally ridiculous. But nevertheless, I think if I'm not mistaken, Charlie, don't they work on around 380 meg?
I had thought they were lower towards 300, 303, but they might be up at 380. And if so, there's a whole bunch of new military trunk radio systems popping up.
The reason I say that is quite a few years ago when one of the products I was supporting was our TVRO satellite receivers. We were one of a few companies that use an RF remote rather than IR. And those operated at 380 meg, and it was a known fact that the antennas and the receivers would do strange things if you lived anywhere near any of the Air Force bases that used the MAC frequencies. At that time, that was the only frequency that was licensed, and we would get calls, and basically you have to explain to people what was going on. So that was kind of interesting. I mean, things have gotten a lot different now. They've gotten a lot more secure, and the receivers actually have gotten less sensitive. One of the ways we got around it was to have the customer clip the little antenna on the back of the satellite receiver to half the length, and basically reducing the sensitivity, and it seemed to cure the problem. It'd be an interesting if anybody knows where those things operate at. I'd like to find some information to send to the Post and say you don't know what you're talking about, because it just doesn't quite seem feasible. But then again, one never knows what the government does. Let's see, what else came in on email this evening? Brian from Union County is checking in, and there was a bunch of DRM stuff that you got there, Charlie. You might want to mention that. Going to bend the rules a little bit. We don't discuss amateur radio stuff, but I got something that's kind of amateur related, and it's kind of neat. I just want to share with everyone. They tipped me off to a movie that was made back in 1939, and the movie itself was called Grand Jury Secrets, and I had some personal interest in the movie. I'm not going to get into that, but it's interesting because I watched it tonight. I actually found somebody on eBay that's selling it. It's one of those movies which is not, it's never been released on VHS or DVD, and it's now what's called in the public domain. So anybody can sell a copy for a modest minimal amount without royalties. Go up on eBay, you'll find a guy, I think in Pennsylvania, that's selling it. What this movie turns out is, it turns out that it's a reporter working with a district attorney, and the reporter happens to be a ham, and he's got a W6 call, and he enlists the help of the fellow hams to bug certain people and to track down cars, and there's a lot of amateur activity in this movie. Also, a ton of vintage equipment in there, and one of the stars is William Frawley, who used to play on, I Love Lucy, and then he played on My Three Sons. Very early movie. He was very young in it. But if anybody has any interest in it, go up on eBay and just do a search for Grand Jury Secrets. And the guy's selling them for $14.99 for the copy. And it's not a bad copy. Very interesting movie. And, it's kind of rare to find a movie with that much reference to a hobby like that. I'd say that more than 50% of the movie, there's hams talking to each other and references, to the hobby, and it's pretty neat. The only thing is all the contacts they make sound like they're going through a repeater. There's not a bit of QRM on there. So I just thought I'd share that if anybody is trying to find a unique gift for somebody with a radio hobby. NT10VWA2SQQ.
Not only that, Bob, but they were using AM on the HF band at that time. So, you're lucky there. No fading, no hash noise, no interference from some CW station.
Actually, here's a transmitter, and they were referring to this as ultra-high short waves. And by the length of the antenna, there was definitely some consultants in here that had radio knowledge. By the length of the antenna and the tuned circuits and so on that I saw, I would bet that this thing, somebody was trying to mimic 2 meters.
Wow, early 2 meter experimentation. And the AM mode. Well, be interesting. Maybe find a copy of the movie somewhere.
Oh, you can find it on eBay. It's the only place you're going to find it. I actually, when I found out about it, I emailed Turner Classic Movies. They don't have a copy of it. What they said was that some local stations might have a copy and it might pop up, but there was nothing scheduled, nor, were they able to do anything, and they explained that the movie is in the public domain, so it's kind of up for grabs. And just on a whim, I did a search on eBay, and boom, there it is. So the copy of the movie that you get was burned on a DVD recorder. It's no label, it's no jacket, but it's still a black and white movie, and it's very watchable, and for my purpose, certainly worth the $15.
In relation to the email that you said Justin sent in about whatever happened to TV Channel 1 and the whole history behind that, the website that he got the story from, if you go up a level, it's all history and trivia of television. And what I do is I put a link on my website in the miscellaneous section. People want to read the article and other stuff about television and how it developed, visit that link. It's called Television History and Trivia. It's one of the new links on the N2NLB.net website.
WB2SGT.
Good, Pete.
Well, the HD is working. An excellent site is called EarlyTelevision.com.
EarlyTelevision.com. Is it put together by anybody in particular, or do you just have to stumble upon it?
No, I don't know the originator. Part of the searches that I did involved a museum in California that was dedicated to a mercury mine that I attended. I guess it was, 8 years old? That's a long time ago. And they had a whole room full of old CRTs. And I'd have to go back to what was saying. EarlyTelevision.com has a lot of great stuff, including simulations of mechanical television reception.
The old spinning disc technology. This article that Justin talks about also references some of the standards that were used as far as bandwidth, number of lines of resolution, and how many frames per second at each stage of development as television came along before it was finally locked down in the late 40s, early 50s. Certainly has had a very interesting track record as it tried to develop itself into the service that it is now. And just as we're basically a little more than 2 years away from it being totally digital on us, it's never going to stand still. There's always something new changing there.
Okay, very true. I'll take a standby for you to call me. The last application of a CBS color wheel was on the Apollo flight because a television camera in color was far too large to carry on the capsules.
Well, since you're the next one up, why don't you go ahead, Pete? That's one of them.
What was that, sir?
Since you're the next one up, why don't you go ahead?
I'm still working on my HDTV project. I've been on eBay. Circuit City has an outlet on eBay. I forget its name. And basically it's stuff without the box, stuff with the box, stuff missing cables, the remote, manuals. I think I'm going to buy a new one. I think I'm going to go for an HDTV STB set-top box receiver. I had mentioned last week about the website from the community, was it CEA, about reception. There are four stations available in New York City, Manhattan, for HGTV. The mileage distance for two was 1.6 miles, which means they're in the Empire State Building. The other two were, I think, 4.6 miles, which leaves them in New Jersey. It's another project. We'll get to it.
Comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I think your information is very outdated, and I'll clue you in something to save you a lot of money. First of all, I wouldn't waste my money on a set-top box, because you're paying a lot more money for something that, you know, what are you going to get for it? Just buy a new TV. Any of the TVs that will be sold after January 1 are going to have a digital tuner in there. Regarding what's available on digital in New York, every channel in New York City, 2 through 13, that is on regular VHF, has a corresponding digital channel. ABC, NBC, CBS, Channel 5, Channel 9, Channel 11, and Channel 13 are all up on digital. If you look at Channel 13, there are actually several channels. So when you go to their digital channel, there's actually three or four channels on there. So there's plenty you can receive over the air. You don't need an elaborate antenna, especially if you live in New York, and just buy any new TV. They're going to have digital channels.
Digital TV stations that's on my website indicate the current VHF or UHF channel that the broadcaster is on now, and their new channel that they're doing the digital television broadcast on, and the number of feeds that we've found so far.
Are you indicating TVs that are going to be sold as of January 1st?
If they were made after a certain date, you know, I forget the date, but if they were made after a certain date, they have to have digital tuners. So any of the newer TVs, hang on just one second.
And add a 300 gig hard drive. I'll look into that.
It has to have a digital tuner by law. And the reason they're doing that is that when they do go all digital, you know, you're not going to be left hung out to dry. So I can't see spending a lot of money for a dedicated set-top box when for probably the same amount of money you can get yourself a TV.
Stores aren't selling them yet.
Excuse me? They are selling them. Trust me. I can't go into detail, but Surf City and Best Buy, the majority of the TVs that are out there right now that they have in stock, they have digital tuners.
Yeah, but how much money are we talking for a new TV?
Small ones? $149?
Sold. I'll look into it. Look into it. Walmart dropped all the STBs, and the stores are going to have to get with the action.
Well, it's going to be a gradual process. Like I said, it's a little bit more than 2 years when everything is mandated to switch over. So they're using this two-year period to entice people to get their new television sets, whatever type. Now, of course, if you're going to be going after the larger screens and the plasmas and the LCDs, you're going to spend more money. But if it's just a standard 25-inch sit-in-your entertainment center type of television, then they don't cost that much, really.
Yeah, but if you consider a television set designed upon a raster scan, 525 line CRT, you know, it's got to be something better than that.
Well, as KC2E and I pointed out, some of the programming isn't exactly high definition. It might be digital, but it's not high definition.
I don't think you could even call it low definition. Jeez. Even in analog, some of it's very questionable. KC2E and I, stop my ears for Bernie.
One other comment, the major manufacturers being Sony, Panasonic, JVC, most of them have stopped making CRT televisions. In fact, what the trend is now, the smaller TVs are going to be made in China by God knows who, and the big three or big four companies are actually going to concentrate on 37-inch end up and definitely flat panel. So the days of CRTs right now are very, very numbered.
You know, it's going to be an interesting thing, Bob, for people who have entertainment centers that have the space in the middle, the TV set, that the set that fits in there is only, let's say, a 25 or 27-inch diagonal. Anything bigger than that, they're going to have to get a whole new entertainment center.
No doubt about it. One of the reasons CRTs, well, there's a number of reasons. Number one, CRTs are heavy and they cost a lot to manufacture and a lot to ship. And as the price on TVs is going down, shipping becomes a major part of the price equation. The other problem is you just can't throw a CRT away anymore, so the manufacturers are actually having to contribute to the recycling.
C2E and I.
Ted Mark.
I thought I heard my name being called earlier. My ears are burning. Yeah, this is, you talk about the recycle bit, Bob. ROHS, is it? I'm seeing this a lot lately on a product I'm buying. You know, I usually, the stuff I buy at the moment is at the board level. And this ROHS stuff is big. Am I right in thinking that that says that they've contributed something to the recycle of that product or products in that manner?
It varies from state to state. Most, you know, it started out with batteries, and if you notice right now, you will not see very many products anymore with a soldered-in battery. And the reason is if the customer can't remove the battery, then the manufacturer is responsible for recycling of the entire product. The CRT fits into the equation, you know, where they say it's recycling, but there's no hard and fast rule. It really depends state to state. Connecticut and Minnesota, and California, are probably the three toughest right now.
So if nobody's making any tubes, one wonders you know, quite where things like oscilloscopes are going to go. All right, so LCD displays on oscilloscopes have been out for a while, but they are just not as fast as a tube. And, well, isn't that the whole point of a scope? You've got a fast display that can display something that usually is fast.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I don't think Tektronix makes a CRT display anymore, and I concur with you. You know, although now, I mean, all the scopes, I mean, at least the ones I use, they're all digital memory scopes. So you can grab multiple images and look at them, but there's still something to be said about a CRT for a scope, and I still like a good old mechanical Simpson 360 meter. I mean, digital meters are nice, but... yeah, it's funny. I have several co-op students that we employ, and when I show them a Simpson 360, they look and they say, "What's that?"
Sure makes us feel old when we start hearing comments like that, Bob. Anyway, Mark, since you're next one in, and you passed on some traffic on the email recently, might want to touch on that. Hence one of them.
Okay. Those of you who are on the mailing list will have seen my ravings over the weekend. I finally got around to looking at my FT847 and was able to convert that very easily to use with DRM, amongst other things. I did the 455 to 12 kilohertz IF conversion. And long story short, I was then able to use it to do some DRM DXing. I had some time in the shack at pretty odd hours over the weekend. And I was able to pull out things like, well, for example, right now on in the middle, of, right at the top end of 75 meters, 3995 is Deutsche Welle in DRM. And I'm receiving them at the moment with no... no lost packets. Been doing that for about an hour, I guess, at the moment. And that's on for till that's actually 24 hours a day. But you know, our window is usually only dark an hour. So you know, if you've got those abilities, then give that a whirl. I guess it's you know, every now and again we'll get something pop up and kind of do a bit of co-channel experience with it and let trash the data. But anyway, point is that I did it, and yeah, an awful lot of the European stuff that technically is not for our market was coming through quite well. Evidently, DW's Sines transmitter in Portugal works well, you know, getting out over here with their 50 kilowatts. And I've also noticed this evening, let me drop it. I also noticed this evening, I've been having a little bit of grief the last 2-3 days decoding Radio Canada's 9800 kilohertz output. They again, going back to a message I said, they changed their schedule. So they're now doing all day from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. And then they get a 45-minute break, and they're back on again at 3:45 with Radio Vatican. The daytime stuff is their own programming, and then in the evening they do, you know, they sell it to whatever broadcaster wants to buy it up. And it's Radio Vatican and RNW and Deutsche Welle and the BBC, and there's a bunch of them all on there. Well, they go off the air for the break, they come back on again 45 minutes later at 3:45. Now I can't decode them anymore. Same data standard, same power output, same. Well, what I discovered today, just because I happened to be tuning in a little bit earlier, was that a station from Ivory Coast, calling themselves Radio... what do they call themselves? Radio... Adventist Mondial, and they gave an Ivory Coast mailing address, are there with a 40 over 9 plus signal at my house at least. Well, of course, when the DRM signal turns on, it is equally as strong, so of course you've got direct co-channel and that trashes the data. It took me a couple of days to work that out, but I wonder how long that will remain the case. So, yeah, anyway, so the 847 was very easy to do, and... yeah, I wrote a web page for it, so if you didn't get that, give me a shout. KC2, you know.
Okay, thanks for that traffic, Mark. Let's see, it's 9:36 7, let's stand by for additional check-ins. Then we'll be with the shortwave scan. KC, WCC KTV, very noisy tonight. I don't know if it's the repeater or your location. Anybody else?
The fireplace was burning on the antenna or something.
It came up and down as we just did that last transmission, so might be your location. Okay, anybody else?
I don't know if you're trying to call me. I was in the tunnel, but I'm going to go back down up here. Still running the net in about half an hour. I'll be back outside.
Okay, Pete. Yeah, we have a friction ground. Check it before. Thank you.
Was it four stops up to my house? All right. I'll be back. KC2CDC. Back over to you, Charlie.
Was that US, BYN? Go ahead.
Making it okay.
You're a little noisy tonight, Ed.
I don't know why. I just wanted to say, I got the new Russian G5W, all frequencies, single size, all ham frequencies, all shortwave frequencies, AM, FM.
Okay, the beginning part of it we lost, but it got better towards the end.
I don't know why it's not coming. I got the new Grundig, G5W.
Ah, the Grundig radio. How do you like it?
Really something, all frequencies, all single sideband, all ham frequencies, all shortwave frequencies, AM perfect, FM perfect. Quite a machine.
Great. G5W. The interesting model. How much you pay for it?
$150. Somebody said Manhattan Radio Shack has it.
Interesting. Okay. I'm always looking for a decent Grundig, and that's not a bad price. Sounds like you picked a winner, Ed.
That costs you know where it's made.
The Grundig's always had a good track record, their equipment. It's, I think it's time. It's like every 5 years or so, it's time for manufacturers to come out with some new stuff, and they get into a little heated competition with each other, and we see some pretty good improvements.
Only has 700 memories. 700.
Only 700 memories. Wow. Well, that puts my Sanji 909 model to shame.
Yeah, you put the memories in very nice. Yeah, I really enjoy it. Couldn't pass it up.
Oh, I bet. Can it scan between the memory locations?
Oh, no scanning the memory.
Okay. Because sometimes that would come in handy if you're looking for a specific station. And you, let's say BBC is running five different frequencies at once in different parts of the world. You pop them all in and hit scan, whichever one's strongest it stopped on. One that was flagged about a year or so ago as being digital experimentation possibly for OEM and other high-level agencies on 32880. Well, it turns out they added another one which supposedly is going to be programmed into various radios of these different departments, and talk group is 32768. So we might have a pattern here that talk groups in the upper half, 32,000 and above, are going to be APCO 25. So just something to keep our eyeballs on this one. Last night I received a phone call from somebody who tipped me off that in addition to the 16 frequencies that the fire department has on UHF for their handheld and radios in the battalion chief's truck, turns out that they're adding 4 more channels. And these channels are going to be programmed into the mobile units in the battalion chief vehicles, the firecom vehicles, and they're going to be the reverse of channels 11 and 12, which are the in-building repeater and the mobile battalion repeater. And there are going to be 2 channels that are going to be the reverse of the 2 subway channels. And while I had this person on the phone, I asked them, has there actually been any use of channel 9 on the radios, which is the only digital channel that's in there, HD channel 9. And I was told that HD channel 9 was being used as a simplex talking channel between the field comm units, incident commander, and the staging area chief in APCO 25 non-encrypted mode. Rebroadcast 3860 and 7185 in lower sideband, 14295 and 21395 in upper sideband. But it turns out that there are still some frequencies being used on the Inmarsat system, which is still an analog mode. If you have any radios that can tune in the L band, which is where Inmarsat is, up at 1.5 gigs or 1500 megahertz, there's about a dozen or so channels that are still available up there between 1535 and 1545. If you have a radio that tunes that range, set up a search limit, 1535 on the lower end, 1545 on the upper end. Set the step rate to 25 kilohertz in FM mode and just let it rip. And you should hear all sorts of chatter in there with chase planes and boats ready to pick up the solid rocket motors when they burn out and the liquid fuel tank when it parachutes down, and basically all the pre- and post-launch activities.
Frequency.
Sorry, what was that?
The first frequency she gave out.
35 megahertz at 1545 megahertz.
The other one, the first one.
Oh, for the Goddard Space Center, WA3NAN, 3860 lower sideband in the 80 meter band, 7185 lower sideband in the 40 meter band, 14295 upper sideband in the 20 meter band, and 21395 upper sideband in the 15 meter band. Okay, there are other various frequencies which are used throughout the HF band on the utility channels. The primary one is 10780. That's called Cape Radio. And that uses upper sideband. Another one that's been heard quite active with them, though the MUF is probably going to shoot it to heck at this time period, but you can try it. At 20185.6, I know, it's an oddball frequency, but the 20 meg frequency and the 10 meg frequency seem to be quite active. You might also want to tune around in the 4 and 5 meg ranges, especially if it's a nighttime launch. Okay, Bob, do we have anything else on email before we wrap it up tonight? There'll be a
2FQQ into one of them. Nothing, Charlie. I just checked us again, and nothing came through.
If anybody wants to check out a free online magazine regarding the satellite broadcasting industry, check me out. There's a free online magazine available at www.satmagazine.com. SATmagazine.com. And this issue is a review of the past year. All sorts of different things on technology, what's going on in Europe, disaster recovery, emergency management, updates on satellites and Wi-Fi, technology solutions for offshore markets, and yada, yada, yada. Might be interesting to read. I just got an email in the past 15 minutes, so I'm going to check this out also. All right, hearing nothing, we'll shut down for this week with just a reminder for those who are attending the New York City ARICS MCOM Group annual meeting this Saturday. It's going to be at noontime, 12 to 3, downtown at 48 Wall Street, the corner of Williams, on the 20th floor. And we're going to have a guest speaker and some conversations about various things. And tutorials of some interesting technical topics. So if you are going to make it, 48 Wall Street at the same time. So that will be 7-3 to everyone, and we'll catch you here next week. And Bob, if there's anything else that we need to shoot out regarding malls and shopping and other fun stuff this year, I think we should do that fairly quickly to get into people's hands. Antoine,
I haven't got anything new on that, Charlie, and I've been listening quite a bit. So we'll see what happens. Maybe over the weekend I'll be in the mall and I'll see what else I can dig up. Problem is, mostly I'm in Granite Park and Garden State Plaza, so what I do find is going to be local Bergen County, and I don't know how many people here would really benefit from that, but if I get it and I can verify them, I'll be happy to pass it along. WA2FQQ.